Chapter 7. When Caldroso Wynne joined the queue behind the Lightskirt Tavern at noon, there were already 200 women standing behind the brothel. 2 hours later, when the line started moving, it was three times that. The women were as diverse a group as could be found in the Warrens, from guild rats as young as 10 who knew that Mama Kay wouldn't hire them, but were so desperate they came anyway, to women who had lived on the rich East Side just a month ago, but had lost their homes in the fires, and then been herded into the Warrens. Some of those were weeping. Others just wore vacant expressions, clutching shawls tight around them. And some were longtime rabbits, laughing and joking with their friends. Working for Mama Kay was the safest gig a rent girl could get. They traded stories how the Mistress of Pleasures dealt with their new Caladoran clientele. They claimed that when the twists hurt you, they had to pay you enough silvers to cover the bruise. Another claimed it was enough crowns to cover it. But no one believed her. When Duchess Tara Grayson, the old duke her father had been killed in the coup, led the resistance out of the city, her followers had all put their shops and homes to the torch. The fires, of course, didn't stop after devouring the properties of those who left. Thousands who'd stayed had been made homeless. It was even worse in the Warrens, where the poor were packed like cattle. Countless hundreds had died. The fires had burned for days. The Caladorans wanted the East Side to get productive as quickly as possible. Those who were homeless were seen as an encumbrance, so soldiers forced them into the Warrens. The dispossessed nobles and artisans had become desperate, but desperation changed nothing. Being forced into the Warrens was a death sentence. For the past month, the God King had allowed his soldiers to do whatever they wished in the Warrens. The men would descend in packs to sate whatever lusts motivated them. Chanting the God's damned prayer to Kali, they raped, they killed, they stole the rabbits' meager possessions merely to throw them in the river and laugh. It seemed it couldn't get worse. But after the assassination attempt, it had. The Caladorans had moved through the Warrens in an organized fashion, block by twisting block. They made mothers choose which of their children would live and put the others to the sword. Women were raped in front of their families. Witches played sick games blasting off body parts. When anyone offered resistance, they rounded up and publicly executed dozens. There were rumors of safe hideouts deeper in the Warrens, underground, but only people well connected in the Sakage could get into those. Everyone had places to hide, but the soldiers came every night, and sometimes during the day. It was only a matter of time before they caught you. Beauty had become a curse. Many of the women who had lovers or husbands, or even protective brothers, had lost them. Resistance meant death. So women came to Mama Kay's brothels, because they were the only safe places in the Warrens. If you were going to get raped, many figured, you might as well get paid for it. Apparently, the brothels still did good business, too. Some Caladorans didn't like the risks of going into the Warrens. Others just liked being assured of bedding a clean and beautiful woman. Already, though, the brothels didn't have many openings, and no one wanted to speculate why they had any at all. Caldrosa held off as long as she could. It wasn't supposed to be like this. That Wurdmeister, Neft Dada, had recruited her specifically because she was a former Sethi pirate who'd been marooned in the Warrens years ago. She hadn't sailed in 10 years and had never been a captain, despite what she told the Wurdmeister. But she was Sethi, and she had promised she could navigate a Caladoran ship through the smugglers' archipelago up the Plith River to the castle. In return, she would get to keep the ship. It had sounded like a fine price for an unsavory bit of work. Caldrosa Wynne had no loyalty to Cenaria, but working for the Caladorans was enough to make anyone's skin crawl. Maybe they even would have kept their part of the deal, giving her that sea cow of a barge that wasn't worth the nails holding it together. Maybe she could have cobbled together a crew to join her, too. Except that some bastard had sunk her ship during the invasion. She'd been able to swim to shore, which was more than she could say for the 200 armored clansmen she'd been ferrying, who were now feeding fish. 4 rapes and 2 times of Toman being beaten half to death later. Here she was. "Name?" the girl at the door asked, holding a quill and paper. She had to be 18, a good decade younger than Caldrosa. And she was stunning. Hair perfect, teeth perfect, long legs, tiny waist, full lips, and a musky sweet scent that made Caldrosa aware of how foul she herself must smell. She despaired. "Caldrosa Wynn. Occupation or special talents?" "I was a pirate." The girl perked up. "Sethi?" Caldrosa nodded, and the girl sent her upstairs. In another hour and a half, Caldrosa Wynn stepped into one of the small bedrooms. The woman here was young and beautiful, too, blonde, petite, and curvy, with big eyes and amazing clothes. "I'm Daedra. Have you ever worked the sheets?" "I assume you don't mean sails." Daedra chuckled. And even that was pretty. A real pirate, huh? Caldrosa touched her clan rings, 4 small hoops in a crescent framing her left cheekbone. "Tetsu clan off Hokai Island." She gestured to the captain's chain she wore, which she put on herself as soon as she got the job for Kalidor. She opted for the finest silver herringbone chain she could afford. It looped from her left earlobe to the lowest of her clan rings. It was a merchant captain's chain, a merchant captain of humble birth. Military captains and the bolder pirate captains wore chains looped from earlobe to earlobe behind their heads, so there was less chance they'd get ripped off in battle. "A pirate captain," she said, "but never caught. If you're caught, you're either hanged or they rip out your rings and exile you. There's some disagreement about which is worse." "Why'd you quit?" "I tangled with a Royal Sethi pirate hunter a few hours before a storm. We gave almost as good as we got, but the storm drove us onto the rocks of the Smuggler's Archipelago. Since then, I've just done whatever." Caldrosa didn't mention that whatever included getting married and working for Kalidor. "Show me your tits." Caldrosa untied her laces and wriggled out of her top. "I'll be damned," Daedra said. "Very good. I think you'll do fine." "But you're all so beautiful," Caldrosa said. Stupid as it was to protest, she couldn't believe her luck was turning. Daedra smiled. "Beautiful we've got. Every one of Mama Kay's girls has to be pretty, and you are. What you've got is exotic. Look at you, clan rings, olive skin. Even your tits are tanned." Caldrosa was suddenly thankful that she'd been so stubborn on her ship that she'd gone topless to make the Kalidoran soldiers stare. It had given her a fierce sunburn, but her skin had darkened and the color hadn't faded yet. "I don't know how you've managed a tan," Daedra said, "but you'll have to keep it up and talk like a pirate. If you want to work for Mama Kay, you're going to be the Sethi pirate girl. You have a husband or a lover?" Caldrosa hesitated. "Husband," she admitted. "The last beating nearly killed him. If you do this, you'll never get him back. A man can forgive a woman who leaves whoring for him, but he'll never forgive one who goes whoring for him." "It's worth it," Caldrosa said. "To save his life, it's worth it. One more thing, 'cause sooner or later you'll ask. We don't know why the Paleys do it. Every country's got twists who like hurting rent girls, but this is different. Some will take their pleasure first and only hurt you afterward, like they're embarrassed. Some won't hurt you at all, but they'll brag afterward that they did and pay Mama Kay's fines without complaining. But they'll always say those same words. You've heard them." Caldrosa nodded. Kalevas something or other? It's old Caladoran. A spell or a prayer or something. Don't think about it. Don't make excuses for them. They're animals. We'll protect you as well as we can, and the money's good, but you'll have to face them every day. Can you do that? Words stuck in Caldrosa's throat. So she nodded again. Then go to Master Picun and tell him you want 3 pirate girl costumes. Make him finish taking your measurements before he bangs you. Caldrosa's eyebrows shot up. Unless you have a problem with that.
You don't think we'll have any trouble, do you?
Eline asked. They were lying down in the wagon, spending one last night under the stars after 3 weeks on the road. Tomorrow, they would enter Caernarvon and their new life. I left all my troubles in Cenaria. Well, except for the 2 that tagged along with me, Kylar said.
Hey,
Uli said. Despite being as scary smart as her real mother, Mama Kay, she was still 11 and easily baited. Tagged along? Eline asked, propping herself up on an elbow.
As I recall, this is my wagon.
That much was true. Jarl had given them the wagon, and Mama Kay had loaded it with herbs Kylar could use to start an herbiary. Perhaps in a nod to Eline's sensibilities, most of them were even legal. If anyone tagged along, it was you.
Me?
Kylar asked. You were making such a pathetic spectacle that I was embarrassed for you. I just wanted to stop your begging.
Well, here I thought you were a helpless...
Kylar said. And now you know better, Eline said, self-satisfied, sitting back into her blankets.
Ain't that the truth?
You've got so many defenses, a man would be lucky to get lucky with you once in 1,000 years, Kylar said with a sigh. Eline gasped and sat up.
Kylar Thaddeus Stern!
Kylar giggled.
Thaddeus? That's a good one. I knew a Thaddeus once.
So did I. He was a blind idiot.
Really? Kylar said, his eyes dancing. The one I knew was famous for his gigantic...
Kylar?
Eline interrupted, motioning toward Uli.
His gigantic what?
Uli asked.
Now you did it,
Eline said.
His gigantic what, Kylar?
Feet. And you know what they say about big feet. He winked lasciviously at Eline.
What?
Uli asked.
Big shoes,
Kylar said. He settled back down in his own blankets, as smug as Eline had been moments before.
I don't get it, Uli said. What's it mean, Eline?
Kylar chuckled evilly.
I'll tell you when you're older, Eline said.
I don't want to know when I'm older. I want to know now, Uli said.
Eline didn't answer her. Instead, she punched Kylar in the arm. He grunted.
Are you going to wrestle now? Uli asked.
She had climbed out of her blankets and was sitting between them.
Because you always end up kissing. It's gross.
She scrunched up her face and made wet kissing noises.
Our little contraceptive,
Kylar said. Much as he loved Uli, Kylar was convinced that she was the only reason that after 3 wonderful weeks on the trail with the woman he loved, he was still a virgin.
Will you do that again?
Eline asked Uli, laughing and wisely heading off the what's a contraceptive question. Uli scrunched her face and made the kissing sounds again, and soon the 3 of them dissolved in laughter that devolved into a tickle fight. Afterwards, sides aching from laughing so hard, Kylar listened to the sounds of the girls breathing. Eline had a gift for falling asleep as soon as her head touched a pillow, and Uli wasn't far behind. Tonight, Kylar's wakefulness was no curse. He felt his very skin was glowing with love. Aline rolled over and nuzzled on his chest. He inhaled the fresh scent of her hair. He couldn't remember having felt so good, so accepted in his entire life. She would drool on him, he knew, but it didn't matter. Drool was somehow cute when Aline did it. No wonder Uli got disgusted. He was pathetic. But for the first time in his life, Kylar felt like a good man. He'd always been good at things, good at lockpicking, climbing, hiding, fighting, poisoning, and killing. But he'd never felt good until Aline. When she looked at him, the Kylar he saw reflected in her eyes wasn't repulsive. He wasn't a murderer. He was the substitute father who had tickle fights with an 11-year-old. He was the love who told Aline she was beautiful and made her believe it for the first time in her life. He was a man with something to give. That was the man Aline saw when she looked at him. She believed so many good things about him that Kylar alternated between believing it himself and thinking she was absolutely crazy. But being persuaded felt great. Tomorrow, they'd reach Caernarvon, and for a time, they would stay with Aline's Aunt Mia. With her help, she was a midwife who knew herbs, Kylar would set up a little herbiary. Then he would overcome Aline's fading objections to fornication, and the way of shadows would be behind him. Forever.